It is Friday, August 21st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, North Korea declares a quasi-state of war with the South. Asian stocks plummet on weak Chinese manufacturing data. And the new hit film Straight Outta Compton continues to ignite controversy. It's all ahead. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un placed his military on high alert and declared a quasi-state of war in frontline areas Friday after North and South Korea exchanged artillery fire near the border. Mr. Kim said frontline units would enter a wartime state starting at 5 p.m. local time Friday. Pyongyang has made similar declarations in the past, including during periods of heightened tension in 2010 and 2013. I spoke with VOA Northeast Asia correspondent Brian Padden in Seoul, and he describes the cause of the current tension.
There had been an incident yesterday where North Korea had supposedly targeted a South Korean loudspeaker tower that was broadcasting anti-regime propaganda, which leads back to a few weeks ago when there was an incident in the border area where a landmine supposedly planted by North Korea was injured two South Korean soldiers. So it's been this slowly escalating tension up until now. Actually, the North Korean ambassador to China just this afternoon specifically said that the reason for the imminent attack is the loudspeaker propaganda happening at the border area. North Korea has set a 48-hour deadline that began yesterday, and so in local time Saturday afternoon, 5 p.m., that deadline will expire, and if the broadcasts continue to go and continue after that time, North Korea has vowed that it will take military action to knock those transmission towers out.
The rhetoric has been fairly fierce in the past between North and South Korea, but does this time it seems to be getting more fierce?
That's hard to say. There are indications that this has been a very calculated and calibrated escalation. The artillery shelling that occurred yesterday from the North Korean side, it hit an empty mountainside. It didn't cause any casualties. South Korea responded with an overwhelming number of artillery shells fired back into the north, but North Korea as well targeted an area that was uninhabited. So on both of these shows of force, it seems like they were specifically trying to limit the amount of damage and to thus limit the reaction and try to limit the conflict, prevent the conflict from spreading.
What has been the response by the South Korean government to this declaration by the North?
South Korea has vowed to continue its broadcast. South Korea has vowed not to give in to what they call pressure, this kind of pressure or this use of military force to try to get them to compel and change their behavior. They have vowed that they will not change. Both sides at this point cannot back down. Both sides at this point do not want war. There are high expectations that something will happen here in the border area, at the least, in the next 24 hours.
And what do you base that on?
We base that on both sides' rhetoric. Both sides are preparing for this. The South Korean Defense Ministry said they expect this to happen, and they're refusing to back down. The North Korean side saying that the broadcasting, the anti-propaganda broadcasts at the border have to end, or they will attack. So both sides have laid down a line in the sand. Interestingly enough, at the same time yesterday, that this attack occurred, a letter was sent from Pyongyang to Seoul. That the letter said two things. The letter said, warned South Korea that it must stop the broadcast or there will be military action, even though there was military action already occurring. But the second thing that the letter said was that North Korea is willing to discuss this issue to try to find an alternative solution. South Korea's response to that was they take at face value North Korea's threat, but totally discount their offer for talks. So both sides seem to be very much wedged into a position where some sort of confrontation has to happen. Now, will it be limited? That's the expectation. There'll be some limited. Will it be like Thursday where there are some limited artillery rounds fired and damage is minimal? We don't know. And even if there are great concerns that these types of controlled violence can easily escalate and get out of hand.
Okay. Thank you very much, Brian.
Thank you.
That's VOA Northeast Asia correspondent Brian Padden in Seoul. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. Andrew, what's the reaction on social media to these heightened tensions?
Oh, there's a lot of reaction, a broad range. And of course, as is to be expected, Korea, South Korea, North Korea are all trending today on social media. One hashtag that's trending is hashtag PrayForKorea. And a lot of people are using this to say, war is not the answer. That's the overwhelming message that people are sending out. They're calling for peace. There's also an image that's being shared around widely. It says, pray for Korea. And the O in the word for is the red and blue circle at the center of the South Korean flag, which is a symbol of peace and balance. So people are trying to use that symbol to call for calm. And it's really hope for both sides. People are saying they're hopeful that South Korea doesn't further provoke the North, that things calm down. But they're also hopeful that maybe the North will, you know, not also provoke anybody, but also maybe give some more rights to their people. So kind of taking it a step further than this conflict and saying, well, maybe this can be a start of something new. It's high hopes for sure. I don't know if they'll be realized, but hope for sure. And then you have Kim Jong-un is trending as well. And now this is interesting because, well, you have hashtag pray for Korea and it's all positive and hopeful. Kim Jong-un, the people who are tweeting about him are doing so a lot of jokes and things. So some of the tweets that I've seen that I thought were interesting were a couple people saying, somebody give Kim Jong-un a Snickers bar. This is, of course, a famous commercial here in the U.S. where you have people that are very grumpy and they are lashing out and they say, hey, have a Snickers and you'll feel better. And then they transform back to their old selves. People saying, you know, Kim Jong-un declares war on the South and people care more about One Direction's new music video, because that was actually the top trending topic this morning. The boy band One Direction released a music video. More people were talking about that for a short time. So people pointing out the kind of absurdity of that. And then there were people that just kind of make statements that are just laying it out and saying, you know, whenever Kim Jong-un is trending, it's never a good thing. Another person saying, I was trying to make a joke about this, but I realize he does a pretty good job on his own. So a lot of jokes at his expense, a lot of people taking the situation, trying to make light of it, but a lot of other people seeing how serious it is and hoping that it resolves quickly and that it doesn't escalate any further.
All right. All right. Well, thanks, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
If you see someone yawn, it's most likely that you'll yawn too. This phenomenon is often referred to as contagious yawning and has been associated with feelings of empathy and bonding. Now, scientists at Baylor University in Texas have found that people with psychopathic traits are less likely to be affected by contagious yawning. Those with psychopathic traits aren't as empathetic and tend to be quite cunning and manipulative without regard for others. The researchers recruited volunteers to serve as test subjects and gave them a psychological screening test to determine their degree of empathy. The volunteers were then shown short video clips showing various facial movements, including yawns, while the researchers recorded the volunteers' reactions. They found that the people with the strongest psychopathic tendencies were the least likely to catch a yawn after seeing it in another person. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, more controversy surrounding the new film Straight Outta Compton. Stocks tumbled sharply Friday in China and across Asia after the release of weaker-than-expected data about Beijing's crucial manufacturing sector. The Shanghai Composite Index ended down 4.2%, extending a slide that saw it lose 11% this week. A key Shenzhen index plummeted 5.4%. In Tokyo, the Nikkei share average, Japan's benchmark stock index, closed down 3%. Shares were also down in Hong Kong, Seoul, Sydney, Singapore, Taiwan, Bangkok, and Jakarta. In the U.S., stocks also suffered Thursday, with the Dow Jones Industrial Average and Standard & Poor's 500 both off 2.1%. Well, investors have also been concerned about further devaluation of China's yuan currency, as well as about whether Beijing will continue to prop up its volatile stock market. Meanwhile, the International Monetary Fund has put off for a year a decision on whether to add China's currency, the yuan, to its special drawing rights, that or SDR basket of top currencies. The Global Lending Agency's board voted to leave the currency basket used in IMF operations unchanged until September 30, 2016. Scott Kennedy of the Washington-based Centers for Strategic and International Studies, speaking with VOA's Victor Beatty from Beijing, he calls the IMF decision modestly significant, saying it's a small technical modification, making the glide path to a newly composed basket easier for central banks worldwide. Well, would adding the Chinese currency give it greater prominence?
If the renminbi is added to the IMF's basket of currencies, it would provide definitely good reputational benefits to China because of this. And the steps that China needs to take for the renminbi to be included involve opening its capital account further, providing more information to the IMF. Those things are also very significant and potentially very beneficial to China in the long run. But there's no big giveaway that others or the IMF is giving the Chinese for their entry into the basket if they do make it.
Given China's recent devaluation, will that have any impact on the IMF decision?
The decision last week by the Chinese to unpeg the value of the renminbi to the U.S. dollar and the modest devaluation they announced at the same time of about 1.9%. I think actually, even though it immediately, in first glance, looks like an effort to give a boost to Chinese exports and perhaps unfairly, I think that actually the IMF and its members will look positively on this because China does need to have a more liberal exchange rate system in place in order for the renminbi to be part of the SDR basket. So I think actually, eventually, once the depreciation stops, which I think they're already essentially about there, and people see that the currency can move in multiple directions in a more market-oriented way, it'll be seen as a plus.
How important is this for China and its prominence in the world, and what does it mean to join the euro, yen, pound, and dollar?
It is not the financial equivalent of the Perm 5 of the UN Security Council. Far from it. It is nice. It is a tip to China's hat that they're a very large country and important, and there's a lot of transactions that occur using the renminbi. But that's really not a lot. What is really important for China is the work that they need to do to get in, which will have a big effect on how the Chinese economy is run by opening up China's financial sector to international transactions, to foreign investors, allowing Chinese capital to flow out as well. That change is extremely significant. The joining the SDR basket itself is minor.
Scott Kennedy of the Washington-based Centers for Strategic and International Studies. One of the world's largest collections of Buddhist art can be found in a barren region of western China along the Silk Road, an ancient trade route. Buddhist monks created the art inside hundreds of caves near the city of Dunhuang over a 1,000-year period. Today, the caves attract hundreds of thousands of tourists each year. Mike O'Sullivan reports at the Getty Museum in Los Angeles, which helps conserve the site, will next year offer visitors the chance to see its wonders at a distance.
The region around Dunhuang is forbidding, but was once part of a busy trade route. Between the 4th and 14th centuries, it was also a center of devotion, says Thomas Gatkins, director of the Getty Research Institute.
If you ever have been there, you will not forget it. 500 caves, all painted with sculptures. And it is an astonishing place of contemplation and of worshiping.
The so-called Magao Caves are located 25 kilometers from the city of Dunhuang in China's Gobi Desert. Since 1989, the Getty Conservation Institute has helped Chinese experts with conservation. Tim Whalen of the Getty Conservation Institute says they are coping with more than flaking paint.
It's sandstorms, it's hundreds of thousands of tourists every year, so you have to kind of pick apart all the various challenges, which we've done with the Dunhuang Academy, the stewards of the site.
The caves were closed for many centuries, but today host nearly 1 million visitors a year, most of them Chinese. Wang Shudong directs the Dunhuang Academy.
This is a very big challenge. Yeah, we need to balance the conservation and tourism, yes.
He says local officials welcome the visitors. Conservationists try to prevent damage to the important site, declared a UNESCO World Heritage Site in 1987. The Getty Museum will display 3 full-size replicas of caves and their paintings, so Los Angeles visitors can experience the art without going to China. The exhibition will also feature rare original textiles, drawings, and manuscripts, including a 9th-century copy of a Buddhist scripture, the Diamond Sutra, on loan from the British Library. It's the world's oldest complete and dated printed book. The exhibit will tell the ancient and modern stories of the caves, says Ted Lipman of the Robert H. N. Ho Family Foundation, one of the sponsors.
What we're looking at will not just be the art itself, but looking at the work that has been done through international cooperation to preserve these resources for the world to enjoy.
The exhibit, Cave Temples of Dunhuang, Buddhist Art on China's Silk Road, will open in Los Angeles in May next year. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that afflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
This is International Edition. The rise of NWA and gangster rap in the late 1980s in Los Angeles is the subject of a new movie, Straight Outta Compton. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with Soul Lounge host Shauna Renee about the movie and her thoughts on its portrayal of legendary rappers Ice Cube, Eazy-E, and Dr. Dre.
It was a hit record. Now it's a hit movie, as a matter of fact, topping the box office. But Straight Outta Compton has generated some controversy. Shauna Renee, what's the controversy? Why are people upset about this movie?
Well, let's begin, first of all, by I want to just congratulate the makers of the movie, the directors and the producers of the movie. No one expected that this movie would do as well as it did. It came in at number one. It made $60 million. It was a fantastic movie. It was a great movie, well-directed, and if you know anything about NWA or you are in any way interested in the environment and the conditions that created the necessity for that kind of music to be released and produced, then you need to see the movie. Now, unfortunately, and we kind of suspected this would be the case, there were so many things, so many pieces, moving pieces in and around NWA and the music industry at that time. So there are some folks who are a little upset that Dr. Dre in particular, who had a history of abuse toward women, did not include those issues or those instances in this movie. Now, he was one of the executive producers. He did have some decision-making ability and I guess chose not to include the fact that he had been known for and had actually been witnessed beating a few women.
From a musicological standpoint here, what's the music like? Do they accurately portray the rise of NWA, and do the guys who are playing, like Ice Cube and Dr. Dre, do they carry it off? I've heard they do very well.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, you know, Ice Cube's son plays him. And there was a point in the movie, you know, they talk about suspension of belief. There was a point in the movie where I forgot I was watching an actor play Ice Cube. They pulled it off. It was cast beautifully. Any complaints that were heard prior to the movie being released have been hushed. They knew exactly what they were doing. They did a great job. The music was wonderful. Of course, there was lots of NWA music, but lots of music that was also popular at that time that inspired the production that Dr. Dre has become so well known for. So it was musically, it was phenomenal as well. It was a great movie. It was a great movie.
All right. Well, I guess that constitutes 5 stars on Shauna's movie review. If you have any comments about Straight Outta Compton, you can send them to her at VOA Lady DJ. That's her Twitter handle. You can also send it to at VOA _music. And you can listen for Shauna every week in the Soul Lounge, where she will be spinning some of your top R&B favorites at www.voanews.com.
Straight Outta Compton, crazy much name Ice Cube. From the gang called with attitude. When I'm called off, I got a sword off. Squeeze the trigger and bodies on hard off. You too, boy, if you mess with me, the police are gonna have to come and get me. Off yo, that's how I'm going now. But I suck at mine with your fast showing now. Purple sucker bubble, they run a rumble. Mix them and cook them in a pot like gumbo. Going off on a mother like that. With a cat, that's pointed at your ass.
Music from the film Straight Outta Compton. That's our show. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks for joining us and have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
To predict the future success of a nation, all you need to do is look at how it treats its women, said President Barack Obama recently during a speech before the African Union. Nobody would put out a football team and then just play half the team. You'd lose, said President Obama. The same is true when it comes to getting everybody an education. You can't leave half the team off, our young women.
When girls cannot go to school and grow up not knowing how to read or write, that denies the world future women engineers, future women doctors, future women business owners, future women presidents. That sets us all back. That's a bad tradition, not providing our girls the same education as our sons.
That is why earlier this year, President Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama launched the Let Girls Learn initiative. Through this program, a number of United States government agencies and non-governmental organizations, including the Department of State, U.S. Agency for International Development, PEPFAR, the Peace Corps, and the Millennium Challenge Corporation, work together to address some of the many challenges preventing adolescent girls from attending and completing school and receiving high-quality education. So, for example, in northern Nigeria, children displaced by conflict, especially adolescent girls, can continue their education at the newly developed learning centers. In Zimbabwe, through the Girls Empowerment Movement, Let Girls Learn helps establish clubs in schools that encourage girls to be educated and empowered decision makers. And in Kenya, the Global Give Back Circle helps disadvantaged girls pursue their education from upper secondary to university and gain skills that help them secure jobs. Let girls learn so they grow up healthy and they grow up strong. That will be good for families, and they will raise smart, healthy children, and that will be good for every one of your nations, said President Obama. Let's lift up the next generation of women leaders who can help fight injustice and forge peace and start new businesses and create. We'll all be better off when women have equal futures.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.